Quincy Health Commissioner Ruth Jones joining us via telephone to give us an update on the coronavirus situation here in Quincy this Monday. Ruth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. I know you're stretched to the max, you and your staff. And, you know, we hear all the thanks going out to all the healthcare workers at the hospitals and clinics. But let's not forget our public health employees, too. You're right there on the front lines with the rest of them.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. We are. We're working 7 days a week, 12-hour days, just to make sure we keep track of everything.
Sure. So where do we stand in Quincy right now, Ruth?
So as of this morning, we have 91 cases. We have six people who died. We have more than 20. We're at this point compiling people that have recovered. As of yesterday, we had 20, but I know we're we will have more by the end of the day today. And we're monitoring over 100 people. That includes our cases and contacts to cases that we monitor and call and make sure the temperature's okay and they're not exhibiting symptoms.
Okay, and of the deaths, do we know any circumstances surrounding them?
For the most part, they are elderly, people who have had pre-existing health issues. So they are in that high-risk group that the state always talks about.
Okay. And are we able to connect any of the cases together right now here in Quincy, Ruth?
Yeah, we can connect some of them to, actually, I'm looking at, you know, the people who died, and there's several of them we can connect to one particular contact, you know, contact to a case. When we get a case, what we end up doing is calling the case and doing an entire investigation of where they were, who they were with, you know, and usually it begins at the time that they're symptomatic and trace it back from that point. And a good deal of these people, we can trace to a contact to a case. However, there are some that are unknown. As you know, from the beginning, we had quite a few cases that were traced to that original Biogen conference that was held in Boston.
Right.
And then we have found, when looking at our statistics and our numbers here, we have quite a few healthcare workers that live in the city of Quincy, and probably because of its proximity to Boston. So we can see that, you know, a lot of them are healthcare workers and may have either, you know, contracted it in work or, you know, from a patient or from a facility. So I think that's what we're seeing the most. Contact to cases, healthcare workers, and contacts to that original Biogen conference that was held in Boston.
Okay. And do you know anything about, are they severe cases? Are they mild cases? Are they kind of a mix of them?
You know, we have a mix of them. I would say the most of them are mild to moderate symptoms, but we are seeing some severe cases. We have several people, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, probably 6 or 7 people that are sick enough that they're in an intensive care unit, and of all different ages, not just elderly. We have some young people also in an intensive care unit. So, it's hard to pinpoint. The ages are everywhere. We're not seeing a lot of little kids, but or teenagers, but we are seeing 20s, age ranging from 20s to 80s. In these cases.
Okay.
That's a huge range. Yeah.
I would say that's disconcerting for sure, given what we thought originally.
It is. You know. It is. Yeah. You know, originally we were led to believe that it was, you know, the highest risk people, and it was hitting this high risk group of people that were in their 70s and 80s with pre-existing health conditions. And we are seeing that, but we're seeing, you know, younger, healthier people that are getting hit pretty hard with this. So, it is very concerning, and I think that's a a good point to make that we are really pushing social distancing. We see a lot of people when the weather gets good, and I know a lot of people are out of work, and kids are out of school and out of college, and you know, we're seeing a lot of people try to get some fresh air and get some exercise, and that's great. But we are not seeing people adhere to social distancing like they should be. People need to take this serious. It is not a vacation. It is not a play date with other, you know, families. Parents, you need to make sure that when your kids are out on their bikes, they're not with five or six other kids from, you know, that are friends of theirs from different households and getting too close. We're seeing that this has become a problem, and I think that people are not taking it seriously enough. We have to have social distancing. It does work. It does help. And we are obviously expanding in our cases, as are all the cities and towns around us. So it's something that I think people need to really take heed and take this serious as far as the social distancing and staying at home when you don't have to be out. We understand people have to go out and, you know, they have to get food and there are certain things that people have to do. But once you do that, and other than going out for maybe getting a little bit of exercise or going for a ride in the car, you need to stay home. That's what this stay at home order is all about. We're trying to stop the spread of this. And I think people need to take it more seriously.
Why do you think this is so much different than the flu, Ruth? I've heard that question come up time and time again. Why don't we do these same things with the flu? Yeah.
So a couple of different reasons. The flu, we have a vaccine for, and usually, I mean, there are some years that they haven't really predicted the vaccine very well, but for the most part, when the flu season comes around, people are vaccinated. People can get the flu shot. They have some immunity from past years of either having the flu or getting the flu shot. So it's something that you have some protection against. This is a novel virus, a new virus that nobody has any immunity to, unless you've already had it. And so we are seeing lots of people get sick. Because nobody has ever had this before, so nobody has any immunity to it. We do not have a vaccine against it yet, and that's going to be a while in the making. The fact that this disease, this virus, is highly transmissible. It gets passed very easily through droplet infection. People can get infected very easily and very quickly, as we saw with the Biogen conference. So. You know, all those things, you put all those circumstances together, and it becomes a virus that's easy to cause a pandemic. And here we are in the middle of a pandemic. So that's why we're so concerned about it. And we are seeing it in all different ages and all different types of circumstances. Again, except for real young kids, not too many in teenagers, though I know some other states have seen them in 17 and 18-year-olds. But like I said, from 20 to 80, we are seeing people getting this virus and some getting really sick from it and ending up in a hospital in an ICU. So we're very concerned about it. And I think that's why you don't see these kind of measures with influenza, because of the fact that we have some immunity and we have a vaccine against it.
Okay. That was a question I was going to ask is folks who have recovered from COVID-19, are they immune from getting it again?
Well, you know, we still don't know a lot about this virus, Joe, and they're looking at, yes, they think a federal government thinks that people, once they've had it, do develop an immunity. In fact, they're looking at that as a treatment to, they're testing the blood of people that have had it, looking for the antigens and antibodies in their blood, and looking to see if that might be a treatment to inject into people that are already ill, and that it will possibly lessen the severity of the virus or stop the virus altogether. So it looks like, from preliminary information we're getting, that people who do get it do develop an immunity to it. But it's hard to predict the severity, of some of these cases in young, healthy people. And they don't seem to have any pre-existing health condition or any immune system issue when they're getting very sick.
Right. And the fact that I guess you can be a carrier, not show any symptoms, but infect other people.
Exactly. We have seen that also, that some people, particularly the younger people, don't get a lot of symptoms or may get symptoms so mild that they don't even realize they have symptoms. They're out and about and doing their thing and come home, and all of a sudden mom and dad or grandma and grandpa get very, very ill from it. And again, the older you are, the more you are at risk for a severe case of this, particularly if you have some underlying health issues to begin with. So that's why it's, again, that, and I hate to keep going back to it, but I think it's important. That's why that social distancing, is so important. I think the younger people think, well, I feel fine, I'm not really going to get this. And so they're out and they're playing basketball and playing football and, going out and riding bikes real close and those type of things, and not realizing that they may actually be harboring the virus or may catch it from someone, not get sick themselves, but then come home and make everybody else in the house sick. And some people make critically ill. So again, it's important.
What's the magic of 6 feet apart, Ruth? Is that a special reason that it's 6 feet?
Yeah. So they've done studies, and when we see a droplet infection, so there's two different ways of some of these virus. Well, there's many different ways of viruses passing, but this particular virus passes, they believe, in what is called a droplet infection. So somebody coughs, sneezes, talks, and spit comes out of your mouth when you do all those things. Mm-hmm. And they have done tests, and it looks like that from person to person, 6 foot is the range that most of these droplets can go. Now, that's different from an airborne. This is not an airborne infection. Sometimes people get it confused. Airborne means that you talk and you sneeze or you spit, and the droplets go in the air and stay in the air. Mm-hmm. Something like measles is an airborne type of infection. This does not stay in, stay in the air for long periods of time, mm-hmm. but the droplets can go for a 6 foot range.
Okay.
So if you stay 6 feet apart and you're talking to somebody, mm-hmm. hopefully there's not a chance that those droplets are going to be breathed in by you or get in your eyes or get in your nose.
Okay. See, that's very interesting to me. I had not heard that before. That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's why they're disinfecting all the hard surfaces also, is if those droplets.
Right, because droplets will fall. Yeah. And they think it can last on surfaces for, and again, this is a new virus, so we don't know everything about it that needs to be known, but, the droplets can get on a surface or can get on, if you sneeze into your hand, you touch a doorknob, you touch your keyboard, the droplets can get on that and stay alive for usually short periods of time, but, they've estimated anywhere from hours to 9 days, and mm-hmm. they're not really sure. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's less than 9 days, but, we don't really know, and so you have to be careful with surfaces, too, and that's why we're telling people, ramp up your cleaning. If you're a manager in an apartment building or a condo building or any building, for that, ramp up your mm-hmm. cleaning, wipe the doorknobs off, and wipe keyboards off and door handles and things like that, cabinet handles, because it's important that you keep, you kind of ramp up the cleaning a little bit.
Great information. Yeah, I'm glad you explained that. Thank you.
Do
you think more testing for folks who have come through the virus and recovered, would that be helpful as opposed to just trying to find out who has it?
The testing, that it's very controversial. Should we test more people?
Yeah.
Right now, the federal government and the state government has specific criteria that they're using for testing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because we don't have enough, we don't really have enough personal protective equipment for the people who are doing the testing to stay safe.
Okay.
We still are drastically lacking in masks and gowns and face shields for these people who have to be protected while they're doing it. So I think, and the amount of tests, though some more tests have come, I believe, to Massachusetts, there's still not a lot of enough tests to test everybody. So I think that's part of why there's certain criteria that we see that not everybody can be tested. I was actually watching on the news today that they're looking at Abbott Laboratories to will be coming out with a test that's going to give you results in 5 to 15 minutes. And I'm assuming it would be like a swab test similar to the rapid flu that we do now in hospitals and clinics. But I'm not sure when exactly that's going to be available. And if that were the case, then someone would know right away before they left their physician's office or their wherever they were going to get tested. They would know right away if they were positive or negative. So that would be a great thing, but I'm not sure the status of that at this point.
Okay. So I guess, you know, when will we kind of know when we've plateaued and starting on the downswing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was listening to Anthony Fauci at the federal level, who I have a lot of esteem for. He's a very smart man and has been in public health for many years. And Dr. Fauci was saying that we have not hit the peak yet. Mm. It's probably at least 2 more weeks before we hit the peak for the amount of deaths from this virus. And they're saying that nationwide in the United States, we could see on the worst case scenario would be 200,000 people dying from this.
Wow.
And of course they look at the worst scenario and you hope for the best scenario.
Yeah.
So he said the death rate probably is going to peak in a couple of weeks. And that's just an estimate on his part. And then along with the death rate, you look at the amount of new cases, because not all cases die. So you also have a second peak of the amount of cases that are coming in. And he said that could be a second peak and might be even, you know, 3 weeks down the road. So I would say to people that, you know, prepare that this is going to go on for a while, that we're in the midst of the worst of it. We're seeing an escalation in cases, and we expected to see that because more people are being tested, and the more people that you test, the more cases that you get. But I would say that, you know, we're probably in this for a little bit more time, at least probably a month or 3 weeks to see any type of peak and start to see if anything's going to fall. And again, that's just an estimate.
Yeah. Here in Quincy, Ruth, what are some key points you'd like folks to, again, keep in mind? I think it always bears repeating.
Yes, social distancing, number one. Okay. Stay 6 feet away from anybody. You know, when we say close contact to a case, when we're looking at tracing our cases, close contact to a case is within 6 feet for 15 minutes. And so we want you to avoid that type of situation. Very easy to forget when you're outside, walking around, talking to somebody. 6 feet is a good distance. And so we want people to be aware of that. We want people to stay home when they don't have to go out. I know you have to go out. I know you got to get out of the house and get a little break from being in. But on sunny days, you know, the last sunny day that we had, I saw people on Wollaston Beach sitting on blankets. There was no social distancing, sitting on benches, sitting on the wall, talking to each other. And so social distancing was pretty much absent. So I think that's number one. Along with that, hand washing. Washing your hands for at least 20 seconds. That's two courses of happy birthday, and wash your hands frequently. Hand washing is the best way to stop the spread of any infectious disease, including this. But it's got to be, Joe, it's got to be a combination of all these things. People need to be able to take this seriously. Again, it's not a vacation. You shouldn't be having play dates. You shouldn't be going into areas that are crowded. The governor's orders don't allow more than 10 people, a gathering of more than 10 people, and they have to maintain social distancing. You know, we're asking people to remember that our restaurants are still delivering. and delivering food and have takeout. So to support your local restaurant, because businesses are having a real hard time right now. And so they depend on people either coming in for takeout or for delivery. And so to keep that in mind and utilize that. When you go into a supermarket, there are certain hours that supermarkets are required to have for people over the age of 60 or 65. And if you're older and you have some health issues, this is the time you should be going to the supermarket. Remember when you're in a market or a grocery store to try to keep your 6 foot distance away from anyone else in there. Use Purell when you get hand sanitizer when you get in the car, and then wash your hands when you get home. Try to keep your hands away from your face, your nose, your eyes, your mouth, your face, until you can get home and wash your hands. And sometimes that's really hard to do because we touch our face a lot without realizing it. But and those are, you know, the major thing, the social distancing and stay at home as much as you can. We're trying to stop the spread of this. We need everybody to take it seriously, and we need everybody to help to stop the spread of this. And if you're doing your part, your neighbor is doing their part, it's going to help us quite a bit. You know, we're here every day and tracking these cases and trying to quarantine people so that everyone else in the city can stay home, stay safe, and stay healthy. But we need you all to buy into this.
Yeah, it's a drastic change of the way we do life here in America.
That certainly is. Yeah. And it's hard. It's really hard to stay in the house for long periods of time. I hear you. But it's something that right now we have to do so that we can, you know, get back to our normal lives.
Right. And I know you don't want folks rushing to their doctor or the hospital if they are sick.
No. Right. Call your doctor first. Or if you think you need to go to the emergency room, call the emergency room first. Yep. and ask. And they might refer you somewhere else or make an appointment for you. We don't want you, if you're ill and you have the symptoms of COVID-19 or you think you have the symptoms of COVID-19, we don't want you just walking into one of these freestanding clinics or doctor's offices or an emergency room because you have the potential to infect anybody else in there. So call them first. If you are ill and you're having symptoms of COVID-19 and you have to call an ambulance, tell the ambulance that you think you might be having symptoms of COVID-19, or when you call 911, tell them that so that our first responders are coming in prepared with personal protective equipment. We can't have our first responders getting sick. They're the people that take care of all of us in an emergency. We want to keep them as safe and as healthy as we can so that they can do their jobs.
Sure. Yeah. Are they adequately equipped with those, with that gear here in Quincy, Ruth?
You know, for a short period of time, but not really. We need more equipment. They're running out. We're trying to utilize equipment according to federal guidelines. So that might mean reusing masks, or keeping the same mask on all day, which, you know, it's better than no mask at all for our responders, but it's getting difficult. We need more personal protective equipment for our healthcare providers, for our police, our fire, and for our ambulance, for Booster Ambulance, which is our ambulance. This equipment goes really quickly. And this is why we have said from the beginning that the general public should not be walking around with masks on. It doesn't really offer very much protection for them. And it really is taking personal protective equipment away from those who need it to take care of people when they're ill.
Sure.
So it's important.
I know that I heard in Boston, the mayor say that the virus has infiltrated the homeless community. Has that happened here in Quincy, to your knowledge?
We have not had any positive cases in our homeless population that I'm aware of. Okay. We have had a few scares. And so it's something that we have to, you know, that we are addressing as far as overflow from the shelter and where to, you know, where to quarantine people who are homeless. So it's an issue that we're in actively discussing and finding ways to put things into place so that if that case comes up, then we'll have the proper place to have people.
Sure. All right. Anything else we should get out this morning?
No, I just, I think we've, you know, talked a lot about the things that people need to do. And I know it's hard to, you know, to stay positive in these kind of situations. We will get through this, and we will get through this together. You know, check on your neighbors from a 6 foot distance to make sure they're okay. If you have some elderly neighbors or people that don't have a lot of family, call them and check in and make sure they're okay. You know, mm-hmm. things like this can bring out, you know, some psychological issues in people, depression right. and PTSD. So if you know, you know, if you have friends and you know people that suffer from those ailments anyways, you know, give them a call, make sure they're okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just talking to somebody, even though we have to social distance, socializing is still important. And I think, you know, a lot of people are finding very creative ways to do that by talking to people or videos and things like that. So I think those are great ideas to keep people connected.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when this is all over, we'll all get through this.
Yeah. And don't forget the regular mail is working, and a nice card or, you know, letter would be appreciated, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I just got a card today from a resident who also retired from a state office, and just said thanks for everything you and your team are doing, and if you need anything, I'm here. And just little things like that make you push on a little bit more. So that's we great. Appreciate all the people that have been calling us and saying thank you, and just hang in there with us. We will get through this, but just heed the warnings, and hopefully we'll all get through this healthy and safe.
Sure. Speaking of phone, is that 24-hour line still up and running?
It is. Yep, the 617-376-1288, and that's a COVID-19 informational line. It's not manned by anyone. It's a mm-hmm. it's a recording that just explains some of the things that, or some of the questions, might answer some of the questions that people might have.
Yeah.
But we're here. My phone is always on. 617-376-1272. Is my direct line here, and I am fielding calls constantly. But if people are worried or they need some information, try the hotline first, mm-hmm. Because that may help. The Mayor's Office of Constituent Services also has people manning the phone there. I believe it's 376-15. I believe it's 1500.
Yep, it is.
And they will answer some of the questions might have, but if it's particular health questions, you can just call the health department. We're happy to talk with you.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes just a human voice on the other end is helpful enough. Thanks so much, Ruth. Really appreciate your time. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Joe. Stay healthy.
Okay. Thank you. You too now.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.